Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, welcome to this edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, period poverty. Perhaps it's a term some listeners may not be familiar with, but for years, Democratic State Representative Debbie Buckner has been trying to get legislation passed that centers around the inadequate access to menstrual hygiene tools and education. Now she's working with the organization Georgia Stomp to advocate for menstrual equity. Also this hour,
it has been an active morning across North Georgia. A large, dangerous tornado, violent tornado.
Tornado outbreak is happening right now across the South. This one was spotted near Montgomery, Alabama.
Quick tornadoes, multiple tornado warnings along this squall line. But I think that the environment becomes...
Why violent storms are showing up earlier than usual, and especially on the East Coast. We'll talk about all that. Important issues indeed. But first, a check of the headlines. A major vote for the Public Service Commission will take place tomorrow. It's regarding a Georgia Power price increase. As Molly Samuel reports, it's the second of three hikes expected this year.
The Georgia Public Service Commission is considering a proposal to increase bills by close to $16 a month for a typical residential household. It's to cover the higher costs of fuels like coal and natural gas that are used in power plants. Rates went up once already in January, and bills will go up again later this year as the nuclear reactors under construction at Plant Vogtle go into service. If it's approved, this increase will go into effect next month. Molly Samuel, WABE News.
And in other news, no other state puts more people under incarceration and supervision than Georgia. That's according to a new report from the Prison Policy Initiative, a nonprofit think tank, as we hear from Shemaine Cruz.
The Prison Policy Initiative, or PPI, says the number of people behind bars alone doesn't capture the true reach of the criminal legal system. It found that while Georgia has the fourth highest incarceration rate nationwide, it ranks first in mass punishment, which includes community supervision, like parole and probation. For every 100,000 Georgia residents, 4,054 are either imprisoned, on parole, or probation. That comes with its own challenges, from vague rules to monthly fees. 28% of Georgia's jail population is behind bars for supervision violations. PPI says the report will allow policymakers to assess the scale and scope of their entire correctional systems. Shemaine Cruz, WABE News.
Get ready. The 2024 U.S. presidential campaign is on in Georgia. That's after Vice President Kamala Harris' recent visit to Atlanta this past Friday. WABE politics reporter Raul Bali says expect the themes of the campaign to be a lot of what she said right here in her speech.
Harris's speech to local lawmakers, officials, and activists included a focus on the past 2 years in office, like the 2021 infrastructure law.
In Atlanta alone, new sidewalks and bike lanes on Central Avenue and Pryor Street. Expansion of the Beltline. And finally, more upgrades to Concourse D at Hartsfield-Jackson.
Harris also referred to what she calls threats to the New South, including changes to Georgia's elections and voting laws and permitless carry for firearms. However, there were no direct mentions of former President Donald Trump. Raul Bally, WABE News, Buckhead.
Workers at Macon-based Bluebird, one of the nation's largest school bus makers, well, they're now among one of very few automakers unions in the South. Employees at the company voted last week to join the United Steelworkers Union. That union represents more than 800,000 workers in a variety of industries. Bluebird has a week to file any objection. From there, they have to certify the vote and negotiate a contract. President Joe Biden congratulated the newly unionized workers and said in a statement that if Americans once again want to lead the world in manufacturing, unions will be a big part of that future. With the federal pandemic emergency now expired, Black women and Latinas in Georgia could face more economic instability, as we hear from WABE's Marlon Hyde.
Black women and Latinas faced disproportionate job losses, pay inequity, and student debt during the pandemic and the economic downturn that came with it. That's according to an analysis by the nonpartisan Georgia Budget and Policy Institute. The public health emergency allowed more people to get health coverage through Medicaid, and nearly a million Georgians enrolled during the pandemic. But now, hundreds of thousands of low-income people and many families of color could lose that coverage. GBPI also says Georgia's cash assistance program doesn't cover enough people or provide enough money. The group recommends raising the state minimum wage, guaranteeing equal pay across genders, and providing paid family and medical leave for all workers. Marlon Hyde, WABE News.
And finally, the rookies have arrived.
There's a build-up phase. Everything's new to them. Just the way they operate. These guys all come from great programs, different backgrounds, so it's just a teaching progression. So they can get in there and jump into the vets, the offseason, and ultimately the most important thing is be ready to go by September 10th.
That's Atlanta Falcons head coach Arthur Smith talking about the newest players to the team after the first day of rookie camp. After day one, first-round draft pick Bijan Robinson says transitioning from college to the pros is all about learning.
I've been blessed to come out here and be with the guys and to show the teammates and the coaches, you know, what I can do. But for me, I just look at it as just getting better every single day. Nothing crazy. You know, obviously, you know, you want to impress everybody, but you still got rules and you still got plays that you got to execute. And for me, I'm just being a good teammate and going out there.
The Falcons are hitting the road for their first preseason game against the Miami Dolphins. No date has been announced at this time. The regular season kicks off September 10th against the Carolina Panthers, of course, right here in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You heard it right here. The Falcons will go 8-8 or 9-7 or whatever it is. I think they'll win 8 games, maybe 9. Who knows? This is Closer Look. We're back in a moment.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Period poverty, perhaps it's a term some of you listeners may not be familiar with, but as defined by the Journal of Global Health Reporter, period poverty defined as a lack of access to menstrual products, hygiene facilities, waste management, and education, and it affects many women globally, causing physical, mental, and emotional challenges. There's another aspect associated with period poverty, too. Taxes. Groups like the Alliance for Period Supplies are accusing Georgia lawmakers of taxing tampons and maxi pads like luxury items. Georgia is one of 22 states that puts a special tax on menstrual products at an added cost of 4%. Now, you can do the math, but I'll tell you, that's at least an extra $5 women and girls must pay every month, and an added cost some people just can't afford. And there are some in the Georgia legislature who are working to repeal what opponents call the tampon tax. State Representative Debbie Buckner has filed bills in 2018, 2019, 2021, and during this year's legislative session. However, all measures so far have been unsuccessful. And one of the defenders of the tax on menstrual products is a woman. That's House Speaker Pro Tem Jan Jones. We'll talk about that in a moment. Now, State Representative Bucket says she's not done fighting, and she's also now aligned with the group STOMP. They're also fighting alongside her. STOMP stands for Stop Tax on Menstrual Products. So I'm joined now by State Representative Debbie Buckner and Claire Cox, the chair of Georgia STOMP, and Ashley James, the secretary of Georgia STOMP. Thank you all for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
I'm going to go around the round table with the added virtual chair here and just get your reflection what you think people probably don't understand when we talk about this, what we call period poverty. And I'm going to start with you, Debbie.
I don't think people understand that limited or inadequate access to the products are having to pay the tax or having to pay the increased cost, which we've seen an increase in the cost for tampons and pads of anywhere from 8 to 9%.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they realize that this is not a luxury. It is a biological occurrence that happens, that we have to have these medical supplies that are tax exempt in many other states and should be in Georgia. And what was a real game changer for me was to realize that we have students in our schools all across the state of Georgia that don't go to school for 3 or 4 days a month because they don't have the supplies they need during their cycle.
Ashley, what about you?
Belief is missing in this conversation. It's just the absenteeism from school and work. We know that over a third of low-income women and girls are missing work, school, and other events when they don't have access to period supplies. And so, you know, if you're at school or work and you look at the desk next to you, it's, you know, it just begs the question, why aren't they here?
Mm-hmm.
And so for organizations like Georgia STOMP and the organization where I am from day to day, Atlanta Globe, we are standing in that gap to make sure that they can show up and be there where mm-hmm. they're needed most.
Claire?
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, don't forget there's the equity issue of the fairness of the sales tax, something that's being assessed on primarily women who have no choice about using this product. Mm-hmm. It's necessary for good health. As Representative Buckner said, it's a medical device that is needed and about which we have no choice. And I think the whatever word you want to use, fairness, equity, mm-hmm. discrimination issue of that is very relevant to this conversation.
And let me stay with you for a moment, Claire. Do you think because often people say, oh, it's a global problem, so they don't think that, oh, this happens in Georgia because global, we think of, you know, third world nations as they are identified as. But this is not just relegated to those nations or small countries that have this issue or you know, very poverty stricken. This is happening here in the United States, and Georgia is one of the states.
It absolutely is. We work very closely. One of our member organizations is related to school nurses. We work very closely with Department of Education and school superintendents throughout the state, and we've heard what a difference having products in schools has made, and we've heard about the patterns of students who aren't there 4 days out of a month and realizing that it's related to this issue when they talk to students. So period poverty in Georgia is absolutely an issue. I kind of have a mantra, anywhere poverty exists, period poverty exists. Mm-hmm. If you can't afford food or housing, you're not going to be able to afford tampons.
And Ashley, this is not just an urban issue. This is rural. This is throughout the state.
Yes, absolutely. We're located here in Cobb County, Georgia, where we're working very closely with our local school districts and our local community agencies. And the need is everywhere, urban, rural, suburban. It's an international, a national and a local issue for sure.
Representative Buckner, you have filed bills, as I mentioned, 2018, 2019, 2021. What has been the issue? Is it the language? Is it just simply that you simple look, we don't want this to be taxed? What's been hindering this from getting bipartisan support?
In the beginning, there was a great deal of pushback because it was so uncomfortable for a lot of the people in the General Assembly. It is for us as well when we have to go through it in a different way. But there's also been this whole conversation of, is this a special interest tax abatement?
Mm-hmm.
And I say that it is not a special interest tax relief because half of the population of the state of Georgia is not a special. Well, we're very special.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
But it's not so. It's not special in the sense that they are not deserving of this tax break.
So I want to be clear for our listeners. I already got one email. So there's an additional tax. Is that what you're saying to the products?
It's a sales tax.
It's a sales tax.
And so what we have been asking for with all of the bills is that the state sales tax would be removed on all of the period products that are sold in Georgia.
And other exemptions like this exist in the state. We're asking for an exemption from the sales tax, from the 4%. Glucose test strips. There are diabetes-related testing supplies. Food is exempt from tax.
Which is health wellness.
Exactly. I mean, there's also a lot of exemptions for businesses and all, but I'm talking about personal exemptions for food and those type items.
And quite honestly, when the sales tax was removed from groceries, I tell this story and people get upset with me, but the truth of the matter is there were no women in the room. The men did not think about it because they don't use them. And no woman was there to bring it up.
You should see these emails. I got three already.
Some people are saying, you know, don't say that it's an oversight, but it was not a malicious action. It was just there were no women at that time in the room.
House Speaker Pro Tem Jan Jones, who you know, says eliminating the tax would cost Georgia $13 million annually and says it would have a negligible effect on our citizens. This is according to the Georgia Recorder. Your response to that?
Well, my response to that is that the state auditor said it would be less than that. $10 million.
And actually, the state portion, if it's eliminated, is in the range from the Department of Audits and Accountants from the state of Georgia of $6 million. That's how much we're talking about, which is less than 0.01% of a $32 billion budget.
Is this still just because it's uncomfortable, through your lens, it's uncomfortable for some state lawmakers to want to even have this conversation because it's about menstrual cycles?
Actually, a lot of the men have gotten to where they are not as uncomfortable as they were in the beginning.
But this is, you know, Jan Jones is coming from an economic issue.
She is. And she has helped us get some money in the budget for some other programs that we can talk about in a minute. But I cannot understand why we can't get this across the finish line. And I do not understand when you talk about people that are fiscal conservatives wanting to give money back as we did this year with the income tax rebate, wanting to cut taxes. Why not this one?
Ashley, when we talk about what this effect, and all of you sort of touched on it a bit, but it's particularly with young girls.
Yes.
And we know that women have missed work, too, but when we talk about girls going to school, missing 3 to 4, and it could be more days because their family, their household, they just simply cannot afford or don't have access to these menstrual products that they need. What that does, how that impacts that child's learning.
Yes, I mean, we all know if you're not school, you're not learning. And then, you know, when you're back to school, you have to make up that missed work. And so, you know, just it's honestly, even beyond the learning issue, it's a dignity issue. And it's a health issue as well, because even if they are showing up to school, they're not focused because maybe there's a substitute product that they're wearing, or they're extending use of a pad or a tampon. So there's discomfort, there's infection, there's the pain associated with it. It's just so many different areas, dignity, confidence, that all impact learning. That's if they even do show up. So, absolutely. It's definitely a ripple effect on young women and young girls, especially, Black and Latina girls.
And that's where I was going actually next, in terms of what populations in the community are we seeing this most impacted
absolutely.
By this?
Yes. We know that, about a quarter of Black and Latina people with periods, have struggled to afford period products in the past year. That's what almost half, you know, 48-49% are negatively improportionately impacted by this period poverty issue. I speak very closely with our school districts, and they do receive funding, to receive products. But often at the point that I'm meeting with them and they're coming to us for access to products, they've exhausted that budget. Mm-hmm. And also we're working with a lot of community agencies that are in the communities, working directly with the families and the youth as well. And that funding does not touch them beyond the schools. So we're trying to stand in that gap for them as well.
Well, Representative Buckner, if you can't get legislation passed, is there a way for the state then to step in, particularly for kids that attend public schools?
And that has happened. And to Speaker Pro Tem Jones's credit, she helped to arrange for funds to be put into the budget so that we could have these supplies in our schools. And we have been working also to make a program come together and work in our public health areas for women that are in need. The thing that I think is really good about the school program is it gives us an opportunity to learn how large the problem is. Mm-hmm. If they go into the nurse's office, we agreed early on to ask three questions, and I have my cheat sheet here so that I've got them right. Mm-hmm. But what do you need? What type product do you need? And then we ask questions like, do you need it for just today? Because we've all had accidents. But is this just for today, or do you need it for the entire week? Mm-hmm. And then we ask the questions, or the nurses ask the question, is there anyone at home that needs products? Mm. That is helping us get to the question, just how widespread is period poverty in our state?
And Claire, we often have incentives for businesses. You know, we have done segments on this show about, you know, for ride sharing, for, you know, employees of companies that agree to, you know, carpool, things like that. And there are tax incentives or whatever. There's probably some type of stipend for transit if you take MARTA. Is this something also that businesses, is this an avenue also for businesses to try to seek if you have this for your employees?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely, yes. I would also say a lot of businesses and local organizations are stepping up to this. Ashley mentioned Atlanta Glow. Georgia Stomp is a coalition of 33 organizations, and probably half of them are period supply organizations. And companies and businesses donate products to them, and they supply them in different circumstances. But yeah, I mean, I think long term, what would be best for our society? This may seem a little bit radical, but we are convinced that toilet paper, paper towels, soap, and water need just to be in a restroom. Period products need to be in restrooms as well.
What are other states doing that you all would like to see maybe Georgia adopt?
Well, I want to, if it's okay, point out that Georgia was, and again, give Speaker Pro Tem Jan Jones this credit, along with the legislature and Representative Buckner and Representative Schofield and some other leaders in this area. Georgia was the first state in the country to put money in the state budget for the purchase of period products in schools. And that's, we should be proud of that. It's good work.
Is it enough then? Do we need legislation?
It is not enough.
Okay.
And we don't mandate it. Other states have done mandates that require the products, but they haven't put money behind that. What else do we need to do? We need to be looking at our colleges and universities, not just our public elementary and middle and high schools. Mm-hmm. We need to, you know, look at state buildings in those areas, but primarily, Georgia has done some good stuff in this area. I want to make sure we recognize that.
I am totally baffled, though, by the disregards that are found in our state budget that were just released last week. There's 134 disregards in the budget, and of those 134, one of them is the increase in the amount of money to cover the increase in the cost of the supplies to go to our schools and our public health. That concerns me. All of them concern me, actually, but that one concerns me, because what kind of statement are we making by taking that and saying we want to disregard this budget appropriation that both the House and the Senate agreed to, mm-hmm, to take care of our students and our women in the state of Georgia with these period products?
So, for example, the $66 million that was cut from, you know, the Board of Regents for their public universities and colleges here in Georgia, mm-hmm, you're saying if you look at something like that, and then these institutions probably need these products as well, is that a sort of an example of where you're going to in terms of how much money is being But we have this surplus.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So why are we not taking care of the taxpayers and the needs that they have with the surplus that we have?
The increase in funding for this year's the FY24 budget, the two increases related to period products were two of the governor's disregards this month, last week.
If you could have a conversation with Governor Kemp, what would do? If do you talk to him?
Yes, I do, but not, you know, it's always on the governor's terms. Of course, mm-hmm. You can't just walk in his office, so you have to have an appointment. But I think I would say, help me understand. Mm-hmm. Help me understand why this was disregarded. What are we trying to do with this particular disregard when we're trying to make sure our, especially the girls in school, are able to attend school and not miss so that their education won't be jeopardized in any way? Why this one? Why was this one? Why did we disregard this increase in funding? Why did we disregard this opportunity to take care of?
And Representative Buckner, I want to be very clear. Has this legislation even gotten a hearing at all?
There were two versions of the bill this year, and it was an interesting attempt by a great senator that did get a hearing over in the Senate. The House bill did not get a hearing yet. But it's still out there in play. So when we come back in January, there may be an opportunity for a hearing then.
And we've had four bills. They've given us one hearing on each of three. You have to have two hearings mm-hmm. to get out of committee. So we've gotten a hearing periodically in the last 7 years, but not enough that they will let us have any progress.
And I want to be clear. This is simply because of the alleged $13 million that Georgia would lose, according to your fellow lawmaker. That this is really about just losing up to $13 million a year if you get rid of that tax. Is this really just about money?
That's the problem. It's confusing to us. We don't know if it's about the money. It's not $13 million.
I'm just telling you what she said.
And
you're talking about
I understand.
House Speaker Pro Tem Jan Jones.
I do disagree with her on the amount because of the state auditor's report.
Okay.
And we're talking about state tax, not state and local sales tax. So that's probably the difference in the number. But based on the state auditor's number, we would not be losing that much. Mm-hmm. And we would be gaining so much more by having all of our girls in school being able to receive education every single day. Instead of missing 4 or 5 a month.
I have a listener who says, Rose, could you ask your panel what can we all do to help? Is there a organization that we can donate to? Now, we don't fundraise for anybody else except for WABE, but if there are organizations out there.
Well, one of the things that's been so refreshing to me, and yet it's also kind of sad, is that women are always willing to help other women. I mean, even on a one-to-one basis, have you got something in your purse that I might need? Mm-hmm. We get it out and hand it to them. But there have been groups all across the state that have had like showers, like a wedding shower, a baby mm-hmm. shower, but it's period product showers, and they have donated materials. But Stomp is probably the best organization in the state.
Georgia Stomp is made up of member organizations, and I'm not trying to plug our website, but if you go there, you can find numerous Atlanta organizations mm-hmm. that collect products and distribute them. We don't collect and distribute. We're a policy group, so we're not looking to do that,
sure.
But our member organizations do that.
Ashley, what about for
Ashley?
Folks
yeah,
who
I'm just
are,
about to interject.
Yeah, but I have a question, too. What about for our folks who are unhoused?
Absolutely. So Atlanta Globe does provide a period supply bank. We receive donations from all sorts of groups, churches, school groups, workplaces on a very regular basis. And we distribute directly within schools, community agencies. We even have partnerships with all three Georgia Health, Medicaid and Medicare providers as well and distribute through them. Definitely get involved, create a drive. We have resources on our website on how to do that. We even have flyers and things like that, that they can utilize. It's pretty much just take and go and then, set up the donation drop off. But we have those partnerships in place, to distribute throughout the communities.
Do we know if on a county level, for example, you know, Fulton mm-hmm. County, DeKalb, health departments, do they have programs? Do y'all partner with them?
They do. So we do not have any direct partnerships with them at this moment, but I believe that they do distribute through like SNAP offices and things like that. I am told that they also distribute. I believe they may, Claire, correct me if I'm wrong, but they may receive funding to purchase products and distribute through state offices, such as, food stamp offices and family services and things like that as well.
Food stamp money can't be used for period products. I do want to say that. But what right. Ashley's referring to is that the Department of Public Health, the state budget has put a very limited amount of money to the Department of Public Health to provide these products on their shelves for those who are unhoused. That's been one of the tragedies of the budget cuts over the last cycle, is that originally there was $500,000 put in the state budget. It was eliminated during the pandemic, and we've been trying to get that funding restored. We fought in the legislature this year and got $200,000 it put back, and that's mm-hmm. part of the governor's disregards.
And just as we wrap up, and this is a note that I intended to say earlier, but 16.9 million people who menstruate in the U.S. are living in poverty. Mm-hmm. 16.9 million. That's a large number, Representative Buckner.
It is a very large number, and they are not a small, self-serving public special interest group.
But two-thirds of that 16.9, according to this from the Journal of Global Health Reports, could not afford menstrual products in the past year, with half needing to choose between menstrual products and food.
And women make less than men, and we are finding ourselves where women are helping other women by donating, but they have to go and buy the full price. Pay the full price, including the tax. And it's just unfair and inequitable every avenue.
And I want to know, because I believe I've seen this or read it, that some of the product makers, they try to also be part of the solution. Some of them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's sort of where we come in as well. We're part of the Alliance for Period Supplies, which is sponsored by you, by Potex. And so we do receive a majority of our products through that partnership. They donate to us, and we distribute through the community as well.
Ashley, I'll start with you as we wrap up. This is an issue that can have a definite solution. Often when we talk about issues, there's not a definite solution, or there's always a holistic approach or whatever. And I've said that word about 8,000 times, but this is an issue that can be solved, you say.
In my opinion, yes. I think the greater awareness there is around the issue, the more we are able to tear down the stigma. And that's probably one of the biggest barriers is the fact that we don't talk about it enough. We talk about poverty, but as Claire said, where there's poverty, there's period poverty. So just making that fact known, more known, I believe, is part of eliminating this issue.
Claire?
Yeah, and picking up on that, I would say that, your point earlier about businesses helping address this, the more we talk about it, the more that it's not something as for stigma or for shame, being shamed of, the more it's just an accepted fact of this is how we need to address and help one another.
Before I get to you, Representative Buckner, Sarah says we're refunding everybody's taxes and not funding menstrual products, which results in 3 to 4 days absenteeism every month for young women. They don't need an education, I guess, since they have a period every month, close quote. That's what Sarah said. So I try to read them as they come in.
Well, I appreciate what Sarah says, because I've had some angst over us doing the refunds and not funding these very important needs and some of the others that were disregarded. And I think what I would say is we are already seeing very small changes, because I've been into several businesses where hanging on the hook of the back of the bathroom door is a bag that has supplies, and it says, use them if you need them. Mm-hmm. And so we are more aware. My goal is that, as was already mentioned, the day will come that when a woman goes into the bathroom, whatever the needs are, toilet paper or tampons or pads, they will be there for them, as well as soap and water.
And you're going to, again, introduce or try to get this legislation?
The bill has been introduced. So it carried over from last year. We will still push for it to have a hearing and hopeful passage. I'm not going to go away or give up. So they might as well do it, and they'll be out. They won't have to be bothered with me.
I've heard a lawmaker say that you might as well do it.
And if it's not me, it's going to be somebody.
And the number of states that it's happened in during our work over the last 7 years has doubled.
All right. So Claire Cox, the chair of Georgia STOMP, Ashley James, the secretary of Georgia STOMP, and State Representative Debbie Buckner, thank you all for being a part of this conversation. I really appreciate it. It's an important conversation. Thank you for what you're trying to do to help so many people.
Thank you.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. According to historic data, Georgia averages about 30 tornadoes per year. But now, according to the National Weather Service, we've already surpassed that number in mid-February. And sadly, we've lost some Georgians who've lost their lives. So here's a question. Why are we seeing a rise in tornadoes? And are they becoming more intense? As most tornadoes are. And is climate change playing a part? Well, here to talk about all this, because he's much more educated and an expert in this than I am, is Walker Ashley. He's a professor of meteorology at Northern Illinois University. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. Let's get to this. More tornadoes that we're seeing in early. Is this simply about climate? Some call it climate disruption or climate change. Is that the reason we're seeing more tornadoes popping up here?
The broader question is cause versus contribution, and everybody wants to point the finger at climate change. And I think people who have lived in Georgia for a long period of time, I grew up in Georgia, so born on Peachtree Street, I know it quite well. Tornadoes have always occurred in Georgia, and they've been a part of our history. And unfortunately, some of the biggest disasters we've had in the state. The question is, yes, are they becoming more numerous or more intense? And I would say that the research preliminarily suggests that climate change is having a contribution to that. But there are other factors, such as just generally more population, a more spread out population, which is leading to more people that can be affected by tornadoes when they do occur. So it's a very, very complex question. And I'd be happy to get into sort of the nitty gritty details. But we're just getting there.
Okay, and let's back up, because I wanted you to be very clear for our listeners. You're saying that is it the conditions that produce the most severe thunderstorms and tornadoes, which can come from those? You're saying is not necessarily related to climate disruption or climate change. I want you to be very clear for our listeners, because they'll send me an email.
So when we talk about impacts, when we talk about a disaster occurring, it's a mixture of the hazard, which in this case is a tornado, commingling with society, that is people. If we have a tornado out of an open field, it's not a disaster. When a tornado affects a neighborhood, it can suddenly become a disaster.
But aren't warming temperatures, and again, I'm not an expert in this, but isn't the warming temperatures all a part of this too? And could someone say, okay, I'll let you take it.
So here we go. We got the way I think of this when we have a disaster is we got two die. If we roll in the dice like we're in Las Vegas, right? In this case, we're rolling the dice for a disaster. On one dice, we have risk, which is the risk of a tornado event occurring. On the other one is society, or what we call human vulnerability. So let's go back to that risk die. This is where climate change becomes involved. There's four fundamental ingredients we need in order to get a storm that produces a tornado. One is moisture, atmospheric moisture. You all know the humidity in Georgia. That's a fundamental ingredient for severe storms. The other one is something called instability. That is the amount of gasoline in the atmosphere necessary to form a storm. Okay. Those two things are dependent upon heat and moisture.
True.
And climate change, under a climate change regime, those two fundamental ingredients are projected to increase.
Gotcha.
And we saw that this year with a very warm Gulf of Mexico. It was anomalously warm down south. Those are the fundamental two ingredients that we need for these sorts of storms, particularly during the cool season when we don't get a lot of warmth and a lot of moisture. And so under a climate change regime, as we move into the 21st century, we're projecting more and more warmth, more and more moisture that is supportive of more and more severe storms, particularly during that, say, January, February, March timeframe. And what we're projecting into the 21st century is kind of like what we saw this year. But I don't want to point my finger and say, oh, the tornadoes that occurred in January, February, or March are due to climate change. The question is how much is climate change contributing to the changes in the frequency and potentially the intensity of those storms?
Okay. So in your research, because you've also talked about not just tornadoes, but these supercell storms, and I want you to be able to explain this for our listeners, what they are, and then the threat they create.
So supercells are, the fancy term supercell is nothing more than just a rotating thunderstorm. That is, the air that is going up in the thunderstorm, what we call the updraft, is literally rotating. It's usually about a 2 to 5 mile wide area within the storm. We call that the mesocyclone, the mesocyclone. In fact, if you turn on your local TV broadcast during a severe weather event, they often have the Doppler radar up there. What they're actually looking at is the rotation in the storms. And that rotation is the definition of what of a supercell. And so some of the research that we did is we projected, we hindcast, we looked backwards into the late 20th century. And then we projected out into the 21st century under sort of different warming scenarios under climate change regimes. And then we just compared and contrasted the population of supercells at the end of the 20th century with those at the end of the 21st century. And the reason we're so concerned about supercells is because they produce the lion's share of tornadoes. They produce the lion's share of significant hail, and even flash flooding is linked to supercells.
So I'm curious then, we may have severe thunderstorms, a lot of them, but it sounds like then in terms of those producing tornadoes, that percentage, and I'm guessing here, is probably pretty low, maybe under, I'm going to throw out a number, 14%, 15%?
Yeah, it is a relatively small percentage. These are very powerful storms, but they on the grand scheme of things, they're a relatively small percentage of the overall thunderstorm population in Georgia. And for parts of for most parts of the United States, they're relatively rare events. But when they do occur, they're the things that cause the billion-dollar disasters.
And we're seeing more east. You know, used to always be, I grew up in the Midwest where, you know, you know, it used to be that Midwest. So you talk about, obviously, Oklahoma, Iowa, Missouri, you know, Kansas, you know, Dorothy and Toto and all that. But we're seeing more on the east. Is that due to the change in the weather and hotter temperatures and early on and all that?
It certainly could be a factor of this, the shifting sort of warmth and more moisture to the east. We're projected to see, for instance, more rainfall in the Midwest and in the east. And this is just, look, if you increase the temperature of the ocean, you increase the temperature of the atmosphere, there's more moisture available for storms. And so it's a simple physics argument. The question becomes when we get into the organized storms, these supercells, just having moisture is not sufficient to have a rotating thunderstorm.
So then here's a question, and it, you know, you're the meteorologist here in a sense, but when we talk about then how we should reconsider how we build our homes, buildings, roads, and bridges to accommodate for these frequent and more intense storms that some could lead to a tornado. Are we, through your lens, is that where we have to start thinking as what we can do as humans to try to somehow, you know, combat this? I mean, we may not be able to prevent the storms, but what can we do to prevent the widespread damage and loss of life?
I think we have to build for a 21st century, not a 20th century. And we've been building for forever and ever based on old climatology. And the climatology is evolving. We know that we have a tornado risk. We know that we have a hurricane risk. We have damaging non-tornadic wind events as well. And of course, significant hail. These are all building code related issues and also how we build. Mm-hmm. The fact is, you know, that Atlanta is probably the epitome of sprawl. Mm-hmm. If you look up sprawl in the dictionary, I bet there's a picture of Atlanta next to it.
Okay.
It's gone from when I was born about 1.9 million to it's over 6.2 million now. And that just isn't a population that's going up. It's spreading out across the landscape.
So, Walker, I hate to end our conversation on some bad news, but I got to ask the question, is this going to get worse then?
That's a really, really good question. All else being equal, increasing number of targets, increasing likelihood of ingredients supportive of severe storms suggests that, yes, it will likely get worse in the 21st century. And that means the audience needs to just be prepared. Mm-hmm. So on a day when we know we have severe weather, be tuned in to watches and warning and be mm-hmm. ready to, just like we are when we put our seatbelts on the car, we get in the car every day. Mm-hmm. When you have a severe weather event day, you just need to be prepared to take action when that does come.
In terms of research and more information that we need, it really is a situation where do we have to wait till the violent storms and the tornadoes come and then we have to do the research? Or what can you tell us about what folks like y'all are doing ahead of this?
Well, the best thing you can do is just be prepared. And I say have multiple ways to get warning. Right. So what are you going to do at 3 a.m.? How are you going to get an alert? A weather radio costs $20 to $30. It could save your life in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Obviously, the wireless alerts that we have on our phones. Mm-hmm. Have your favorite local TV broadcaster that you tune into. Yeah. There's some good ones in Atlanta. But have multiple ways to get information. And then what are you going to do with that information? Mm-hmm. Just having that information isn't going to save your life.
But
you need to have a place in your house, or if in your manufactured house, you might need to leave that house.
But also too, Walker, for some communities, particularly when we get outside in other parts of Georgia where broadband issue, you talk about your cell phone alerts. Well, if you don't have cell coverage, you can't get it. If you don't have good reception, you know, to get any type of news and information, and I'm talking about in rural parts of Georgia, then that's an issue as well. You know, I know the sirens used to be a thing, but
I don't put any stock in sirens. I hate to say it. I have sirens in my own town, and they're a 1950s technology.
Really?
For me, what do I have for my family? I have a weather radio. Mm-hmm. And just to be, the lion's share of Atlanta, all of Georgia is covered by weather radio. Mm-hmm. So if you have a weather radio, you have a way to get an alert. Obviously, AM radio and your local TV broadcast will give you the alerts as well. But just have multiple ways to get that information ahead of time. And then what are you going to do when you get that information? Mm-hmm. So the interior, obviously a basement.
Sure.
But if you don't have a basement, which a lot of people do not in Georgia, mm-hmm. head to the interior bathroom and take shelter there. The truth is, if you do the right things, your chance of survival, even in a violent tornado, is very, very high. Mm-hmm. Most people survive tornadoes. We don't mention those statistics, but most people do if you do the right things. The people I'm most worried about are those in manufactured and mobile homes. Mm-hmm. And they really need to have a plan of attack at the watch stage and maybe need to evacuate or move to a different location while that threat persists. Because unfortunately, the lion's share of the deaths that we've had this year have been in manufactured housing.
Well, Walker, I do have, talking about ending on a bad, I have an email that says, this guy's full of bad news. Sorry about that.
Oh, no. Look, tornadoes are a part of our lives. And again, we can be positive and look to just be prepared and you'll be fine if you take action.
Walker Ashley, professor of meteorology at Northern Illinois University. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation.
And that's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are Daniel Razel, Ashawn Hudson. Our supervising producer is Tiffany Griffith. Our engineer is Sawyer Vanderwerth. A reminder to send me your emails if y'all been doing all. I must have missed me over the weekend. I don't know. Been sending a lot of emails. rose@wabe.org. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes
you need to hit pause. And rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.